Tonight, our weekly flashback to some of baseball's most unforgettable games continues with Game 4 of the 2001 World Series. The Diamondbacks, the Yankees, the night that Derek Jeter became Mr. November. You will see it tonight, 7 Eastern on ESPN and on the ESPN app. And with that thought in mind, it is time to get up with the sweetest words in the language of baseball, play ball. There's an offer on the table to start the season. We've got all the details right off the top. Man, Michael Jordan was tough on teammates, but wait until you hear who he absolutely would not tangle with. Charles Barkley weighs in. And then, after tanking for Tua, will the Dolphins now ride their quarterback all the way to a Super Bowl? You've got questions. We've got answers as we get up with you, starting right now. And we get up and go, and it begins with Tua, who has agreed to terms with the Dolphins on a 4-year deal. It's $30+ million, including almost $20 million in a signing bonus. The deal also contains a 50-year team option, so he's signed, sealed, and delivered. The NBA and NBAPA have reached an agreement to push back the deadline to terminate the CBA until September. The original 60-day window was closing early this week. That is worth keeping a close eye on. Across the pond, the UK government has cleared the Premier League to resume play without fans starting June 1st. The league's 20 teams are now expected to vote on whether to resume the season in the next few days. And that brings us to our big story this morning. Baseball's owners have approved a proposal for a return-to-play scenario that would have teams starting the 2020 season in their home stadiums without fans beginning in July. The commissioner, Rob Manfred, is expected to present the proposal to the players later today. Now, here are the details that we have. It would be an 82-game schedule, an expanded playoffs of 14 teams, a universal DH. The schedules would comprise of just division opponents and interleague teams that were close by. They'd be played in stadiums that have local and state government approval. And then the big one regards money. All revenue in the proposal would be split 50-50 between owners and players. And the players don't like it. The Players Association Executive Director Tony Clark told The Athletic, "A system that restricts player pay based on revenues is a salary cap, period. This is not the first salary cap proposal our union has received. It probably won't be the last. That the league is trying to take advantage of a global health crisis to get what they failed to achieve in the past and to anonymously negotiate through the media for the last several days suggests they know exactly how this will be received. None of this is beneficial to the process of finding a way for us to safely get back on the field and resume the 2020 season, which continues to be our sole focus." So we welcome back our insider, Jeff Passan, here, and Mark Teixeira will join us in a moment. And Jeff, we talked an hour ago, and I think a lot of fans are going to be very bothered by some of this rhetoric in the middle of a global pandemic. I made no secret of the fact that I myself am bothered. But I know you've done some digging into this. What can you tell us further about the idea of a 50-50 split and what it might actually mean for the players?
Well, first off, Greeny, it's completely understandable that you're bothered by this. We're talking about money right now in the middle of a global pandemic when a sport could be back in America, like a team sport, not just like UFC fighting, not somebody driving around a racetrack, not somebody hitting a golf ball, like nine guys out on the field and one guy in the batter's box. And we're what, you know, a month and change away from that potentially, and it could fall apart because of money? That's a really bothersome thing to think about. But the interesting part of this 50-50 revenue split is that right now players are due something like $4.3 billion for this year in salary. And because of an agreement in March, that is prorated to the number of games played. So they would be paid, you know, somewhere in the range of $2.1 to $2.2 billion total. There's an argument to be made that they could actually make more money with the 50-50 revenue split than they would under the deal that they have right now. But the problem with this, Greeny, is that when you go with a 50-50 revenue split, God forbid that a second wave comes and hits and wipes out the playoffs, right? God forbid it hits, period. But if it wipes out the playoffs, that's $1 to $1.5 billion right there that just gets sliced off the books. And if you have a 50-50 revenue split and you lose $1.5 billion, that's why MLB is doing this, to mitigate the risk of the potential for there to be no playoffs. Because as we know with the coronavirus, we don't know what's going to happen tomorrow, let alone months down the road.
Okay, so I understand all that part of it. And I'm not suggesting
that people should not be concerning themselves with the finances, whether they are on the management side or on the labor side. This is a business, after all, and no one should be expecting it to be otherwise. I do think, however, the public rhetoric is unseemly. Yeah. And candidly, it's a terrible idea. And Tony Clark is a smart man, and he's representing his players as he should. But to be making statements that forceful in the middle of a pandemic, when we have 20% of the country or some number like that, some people are estimating, could wind up being unemployed by the end of next week. And when lots and lots of people are putting themselves in harm's way to go about doing their jobs, I can't be the only one who thinks that it just sounds bad for people who is representing a union where the average salary is $4.4 million to be speaking as forcefully as he did yesterday.
Yeah, I think you're preaching to the choir in a lot of places. And part of the issue, Greeny, I don't want to make this all about optics. Because when you make something about optics, there's almost something fake to it. Like, you want to know what is at the heart of people's arguments and what's really going on. But in a situation like this, optics matter. And the MLBPA has the most perfect piece of optics you could ever wish for. As the owners are sitting there and saying, you know, we're not going to be able to pay this. We're going to make it about money. The players could do what Sean Doolittle did. I don't know if you saw the thread that he had on Twitter, but he essentially laid out all the questions that he has about health and safety. And I understand health and safety have become buzzwords. You know, we're going to prioritize health and safety. It's of the utmost importance. For the players, Greeny, who are going to be going out there, it's a legitimate question. How are you going to be keeping us safe? And that's a question that, frankly, Major League Baseball needs to answer. So if the players could capture that element of it, say, health and safety are our number one priority, the money will take care of itself, I think that would be a really good look for them and something that they could hold on to long term.
I'm told I have Mark Teixeira back with us here. We're having momentary difficulty with his connection. Good morning again, Tex. So you've heard, I hope, pieces of this conversation here. Let me just go to you. If you were an active player right now, what would your position on all of this be?
Well, these are unprecedented times. And first of all, Tony Clark is right. Scott Boras, we heard his comments. Right. This is not the time for players to be backing down, other than the fact that this is a pandemic. So any other year, I'd be on the player's side. I would say, yes, don't back down, guys. But this year is different. And I think we have an opportunity as an industry to come together and understand that sacrifices are being made all around the nation, all around the world because of this pandemic. And as Jeff talked about, players could actually make more money as a percentage of revenue under this plan than they normally would. So 50-50 sounds like a very reasonable plan for the players to accept.
Ultimately, Jeff, let's figure out where this thing goes from here. They're going to present the proposal to the players today. Rob Manfred's going to present this proposal to Tony Clark and the Players Association. Then what happens?
Well, it depends on what's said in that meeting today. There's a chance, Greeny, that they just look past the financial element and try to lay out what the actual plan is to get guys back on the field and to get them safe and what the logistics are for this whole thing and when it's going to start and all that and say, you know what, let's save the financial stuff for later. But if they go in full bore with the finances, you know the union's going to come right back at them and say, hey, if you want us to understand why you're coming at us with this proposal, give us some more information. Let us know how owners are losing as much money as you say they are and why you want us to accept this proposal. And I think some transparency in this situation will go a really long way. And it's something that MLB should consider and something that the union's right to ask for.
Tex, I've covered the sport a really long time, back to an era when the relationship between the owners and the players was as contentious as anything that I've ever seen in practically any industry. It has been my impression that that relationship has been significantly better in recent years. From where you sit, do you feel there is generally trust on the side of the players that whatever it is they're going to be told by the people they work for, that they can believe in it?
No, because I think players, you know, I remember my rookie year, my very first union meeting, you know, when Donald Fehr came into the room and the owners. So the owners put out a proposal like this. The players are basically told, don't trust them. Right away, they're trying to get you. They're trying to, you know, pull the wool over your eyes. So players do not trust the owners just in general.
All right, I feel like we're losing Texas set up there. Guys, thank you both very much. I appreciate it. And Jeff, obviously, will continue to follow this. It's going to be a very busy and important day in baseball. We'll be following your Twitter feed, and of course, you'll be here all over ESPN all morning. I want to get a quick take on this from Dominique Foxworth. And again, I'll remind anyone who's not aware that Neek was the president of the NFL Players Association and was the COO of the NBA Players Association. So you've been in the room where it happens on all of these things. And look, if I gave you the impression that I'm not on the player's side in this and generally speaking in everything, then I gave you the wrong impression. I'm 100% right on the side of labor in practically every negotiation I've ever heard of. That said, I do believe these are extraordinary circumstances. And at minimum, everyone needs to watch their language, like just putting stuff out there. The choice of words, I thought in this case, was a huge mistake.
Yeah, I mean, I can't disagree with you on that. Like, it's, and to the point that Jeff was making earlier, it's bad optics. I just don't understand the position that Texas has taken and other people are taking, that the players should back down in this situation. Maybe the owners should be the one that back down. It just feels odd to me that it feels like a lot of the pressure falls on the players and the things that Tony Clark is saying. Like, it's Tony Clark's job to say things like that. Part of the job of executive director is to kind of go out there and say the things that people don't like and then everyone can hate you. Part of the reason why I didn't want to continue to pursue a career in labor is because the end job is the executive director, where you end up having to say things like this. So I just find it kind of uncomfortable and unseemly is the word you use. I agree it's unseemly to hear these things, but it's also a little bit unseemly for us to react by seeing, in this situation, metaphorically, the owners are punching the players in the face and they were coming to the players and saying and being upset at them for creating a commotion. Like, the problem here, and I understand the fans may not care about all that, but I'm not a fan. Like, I'm an analyst. I'm a former junior guy. Like, my job is to see this at a deeper level than the fans and to fully explain to them that what's happening in this situation is not billionaires and millionaires fighting over how to split up the money as much as it is the owners trying to use this as an opportunity to improve their standing and to gain some ground that they haven't been able to gain in the many decades that we've had collective bargaining.
It feels to me like if everyone's primary interest was to figure out a way to bridge that gap on a one-year basis based upon the extraordinary circumstances, that shouldn't be that hard to do. And right. So hopefully that is what they will do. Neek, thank you. We have more football to get to you as we continue. The question is, Dak Prescott or Carson Wentz? Neek or Orlovsky? Why, my two friends have different opinions on two talented young quarterbacks. You'll hear them as we roll on. And then Charles Barkley says Michael Jordan was tough on specific teammates only. Was he right? Jalen and Stephen A. will answer those questions and more as we roll on. Let's get up on ESPN.
Geico gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name, check. Birthday, Social Security. Is that a thing? Hey, mom, what is my Social Security number? Mom? Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
Geico. Always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
It is time to continue our two a day in the month of May. Two questions a day about the National Football League through this month. And this one begins with Dak Prescott, who, as we have discussed at great length, has until July 15th to sign his franchise tag with the Cowboys. Former Washington quarterback Joe Theismann weighed in on all of this. He was on the JR Sports Brief on CBS Sports Radio. And he said, if I was advising Dak Prescott, I would say, take the money. What are you looking for? Another couple million? You're never going to see the last year of this contract anyway. You're not a top five quarterback in the National Football League. You're a good football player. You have the potential to be better. But what have you done? We're going to focus for the moment on the phrase, you're not a top five quarterback in the National Football League. Because to me, anything is an excuse to put together a list. And no one does that better than Dan Orlovsky. So, Dan, let's figure out if Theismann is right. Who are the top five quarterbacks in the National Football League going into this next season?
Let's start at number one because it's the obvious choice, Greeny. Patrick Mahomes. Really, the resume speaks for itself. What he's done in his first 2 years as a starter has been absolutely remarkable, winning the MVP and then obviously leading that team to the Super Bowl last year. Just an outstanding player. That offense is basically back, intact, moving forward with the addition of Clyde Edwards-Helaire. He's going to have another big-time season. He's the best quarterback in football. Number two, Russell Wilson, probably the most underrated quarterback in football as well. Leads the NFL in touchdowns over the last 3 years. You get a second year of DK Metcalf. Tyler Lockett's an underappreciated wide receiver. The addition of Greg Olsen, probably the quarterback that does the most with the least when you talk about weapons and people around him. Russell Wilson, the second-best quarterback in football. The third-best quarterback in football is Lamar Jackson. What a growth we saw last year and him really running away with the MVP trophy. I love the fact that they've added Duvernay. You get Hollywood Brown year two. Miles Boykin year two. I'm only excited to watch him continue to develop his all-around game. He's taken the NFL by storm. Number four, Tom Brady. Tom Brady still is going to play at an incredibly high level. Last year, with what I could argue being a bottom three or bottom four skill position player supporting cast, threw for 4,000 yards and 24 touchdowns. Book it. He's going to throw for 30-plus touchdowns and 4,500 yards. He's still the fourth best quarterback in football. And then my fifth best quarterback in football is Carson Wentz. You can't dispute what he accomplished last year. To go win six games and not have a receiver have over 75 yards. To throw for over 4,000 yards and not have a single receiver have over 500 yards speaks for itself. Last year going into it, he was just a talent. What he saw, what he did last year was mature into a top five quarterback. That's my top four to five quarterbacks. Top five quarterbacks in the NFL right now.
I like it. Dominique, I love the look on your face. Go.
I mean, I love the list. Those are great quarterbacks. But Dak is better than Carson Wentz. Like, we've been over this several times. There's no statistical category where you can look at and say that Carson, none of the important ones at least, that Carson Wentz is better than Dak. Over their 4 year careers, Dak's had a higher QBR. Higher QBR on fourth downs. Higher QBR on third downs. Higher QBR versus the blitz. Better yards per attempt. He's fifth QBR in deep passes, whereas Wentz is 28th. He's better at just about everything. He's better in the fourth quarter. He has more fourth quarter comebacks. He has 8 fourth quarter comebacks to Wentz's 6. He has 14 game-winning drives to Wentz's 8. Like, he's done everything. He's actually played in the playoffs. He hasn't missed a game. He's 19-13 in one possession games to Wentz, who is 13-17. Like, there's no argument, that reasonable argument, that Wentz has actually been better than Dak. And the only thing that people put up is somehow that Wentz, that Dak had a great surrounding cast. Wentz's cast won the Super Bowl without him. That surrounding cast is pretty good. And obviously, he's had a much better coaching staff around him. The answer to the question number five is Rain Dakota Prescott. That's it.
You may not be able to see this, but Dan has been disrobing the entire time that you've been making these comments. So, Dan, go ahead.
You ready for this funeral, Foxworth? Okay, first of all, you of all people should not throw out the quarterback win and loss stat because you know that is a skewed thing when it comes to figuring out who's better. Okay, so don't have the conversation with me unless you have the only to do it next to your name. Because Carson Wentz, let's just look at last year. Last year, Carson Wentz became the first player ever in the history of the NFL to have three straight seasons of 20-plus touchdowns and 7 or less interceptions. The only guys to do it 2 years in a row are Brady, Hall of Famer, Breeze, Hall of Famer, Rodgers, Hall of Famer, and Russell, Hall of Famer. He's got the second best touchdown to interception ratio in his first 4 years as a starter ever behind Aaron Rodgers. He's got 19 straight games in the regular season with a touchdown pass. No one's taking that record into 2020 from Carson Wentz. He owns it right now. And last year, let me keep going because there's more. Last year, 4,000-plus yards, 25-plus touchdowns, and single-digit interceptions. Only Rodgers, Russell, and Mahomes did that. He's got his name next to his historical records in the NFL. NFL. Don't talk to me about Dak last year, who had a good year, and everyone said, look what he did. He had 19 touchdowns versus bottom 10 defenses. 19 versus bottom 10 defenses. Okay. It led the NFL, Dom. It's not a comparison.
Okay. We have a problem.
It's not a comparison.
I do not want to set a precedent that in order to get the opportunity to speak on the show, you have to take off clothing. So in the interest of not setting that precedent, Neek, make a quick comment because I have to throw a monkey wrench into the whole thing. Go ahead.
No problem. So if we're going to throw out win-loss as a stat, that's fine. I'm with you. We need to throw out all those garbage counting stats that you – like, we're past this. It's not 1993. We use analytics. You're talking about how many yards he threw for as if QBR isn't a much better assessment of how a quarterback plays, the number of yards and – how many touchdowns he's thrown? Don't. How many consecutive games he's thrown a touchdown pass? Stop it. Who cares about
that? I only have a minute here.
Let's go to QBR.
I'm not arguing that Carson Wentz isn't great. I think he's great. But I also think Dak Prescott is just a smidge better, and his resume seems to suggest that I'm right.
Can I say
Take off your shirt, Dan, entirely other thing?
Guys, to both of you. Can I just say one entirely other thing to both of you? Dak Prescott is a terrific quarterback. Carson Wentz is a terrific quarterback. But if you gave me the option to start a team with either of them or Deshaun Watson, I would take Deshaun Watson. Dan Orlovsky, what are your thoughts?
Listen, I've got a list, Greeny. Deshaun Watson is right there for me. Like, I'm not gonna throw haymakers with you about that. I love Deshaun Watson. I think Carson Wentz certainly has accomplished more.
Are they in the same class? I'm not gonna disagree with you too much.
Dom?
Is Dak in the same class as Watson and Wentz? That's all I'm asking.
Hey, Dom Foxworth, you want to use analytics in QBR. Okay, let's go to how those quarterbacks QBR-wise performed against top 10 defenses last year. Dak Prescott had a 55 QBR, like 15th or 16th in the NFL. Carson Wentz had 72.9, fourth best. Case closed. It's over. There was your funeral.
I'm out of time here. I'm not taking off any clothing whatsoever to make my case. I'm comfortable with everyone supporting their guy. You guys keep your shirts on. We got more to do as the program continues. Coming up, Michael Jordan was hard on teammates. He admitted that himself. Charles Barkley thinks he chose his targets carefully. You'll hear what Stephen A. and Jalen think when they join us next. Get up on ESPN.
It's your home speaking, and I need you to do me a couple of favors. First, could you get that blueberry that rolled under the fridge last week? It's throwing my feng shui off. Second thing, bundle your home and car insurance with GEICO. It's easy, and we could save money. Lastly, I know you were thinking of painting the nursery back to off-white, but I'm actually feeling this baby blue. Didn't think it was my color, but I am pulling it off.
GEICO. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
So Shaquille O'Neal thinks there should be an asterisk attached to whichever team wins the NBA championship this year, if we are all fortunate enough to see one, and as a result thinks we should just scrap the season. Lots of people seem to agree with that. To those people, I ask the following questions. How many titles did Tim Duncan win in his NBA career? How about Michael Jordan, LeBron James, Kawhi Leonard? You know the answers because these numbers are ingrained in our brains. Duncan won 5. Not 4, because the first one came in 1999 in a 50-game season. He won 5. LeBron won 3. Not 2, because Draymond Green got suspended in the finals and allowed the Cavaliers a comeback that otherwise seemed impossible. He's got 3 rings. Kawhi won 2. Not just 1, because KD and Klay Thompson got hurt last year during the finals. He's a 2-time champion. History is written by the winners, and those include Michael Jordan. Overlooked in all the talk of MJ's 6 titles is the spring of 97. When the Bulls' path through the East was forever changed by 5 Knicks, including Patrick Ewing, getting suspended for coming on the court during a fight in a series they surely would otherwise have won against Miami. The Knicks would have been a real threat to Jordan that year. Instead, Chicago took out the Heat in 5 easy games. Miami didn't score 90 points in any of them. No one talks about that anymore. Just as they won't 20 years from now if LeBron wins a title this summer. It will be his 4th. No more, no less. And further, I would argue that considering all that's happened, a championship this year might mean more than any other, not less. So I say, let's forget about the talk of an asterisk, and if we can, let's play some ball. That's what I think. Let me bring in 2 of my favorites to see what they think. Stephen A. and Jalen are here. Steve, the floor is yours. What do you think?
Completely agree with you, Greeny. I mean, that's how you look at it. And even though there's an asterisk attached to the season, I think we got to take into account the totality of this moment, what sports means to this nation. There's not a single one of us, not me, not you, not Jalen, nor anyone that is saying just shove aside the issue of safety. But we do have to ask ourselves, how important is sports to our society? Think about from a psychological perspective how it uplifts us all. And more importantly than anything else, this is something that I've religiously brought up on First Take. As far as I can recall, nobody can give us a definitive date or time as to when a vaccine is going to be available. So the same thing that they'll be saying a month from now, 2 months from now, 3 months from now, they could potentially be saying a year from now. Are we supposed to go the next 6 months, a year, 18 months without working, without having sports, without taking into account the hundreds of thousands of people that are employed by professional sports? I would say no. So you prioritize safety. You take every caution potentially possible. You address it from that standpoint. And then you alert people as to the potential risk that may exist at that particular moment in time that sports will return. And you go from there, because that's exactly what we'll be asking the average Joe out there going to work in corporate America or beyond. Each and every single day moving forward, once this economy opens up, whether it's in phases or in its totality, that's the reality of the situation. That's what I'm dealing with.
Yeah. And Jalen, how about the idea of the asterisk? How about the notion that because of the unusual circumstances of the season, which were beyond anyone's control, that the championship would somehow be less significant?
Well, an asterisk doesn't necessarily mean that it has a negative connotation. And I think in this situation, it'll have a positive one, because everybody understands that we're dealing with a pandemic in our country. And I like the examples that you highlighted, because you could go deeper into that when we start talking about franchises and their overall championships. What about before integration in Major League Baseball, the NFL, and the NBA? Are we still counting those championships? To me, the negative side of this is what you look at when you look at what happened with the Houston Astros or the Boston Red Sox. Those negative asterisks carry a bad influence for the future. I think for the NBA to be back playing would be a positive thing. It would be an uplifting thing, as Stephen A. said. And I do believe that there's going to be a path for that to happen. But look, lastly, Greeny, no further than the Houston Rockets. I remember being in the league when they won their first couple of championships, and it was like, well, would they really had won had Michael Jordan not played baseball 1 year? The second year, he only played 17 games. The three-point line was a lot shorter. Now when we look back at history, it's like Hakeem Olajuwon is an all-time great player who won back-to-back championships. We don't put an asterisk on it.
Now, Stephen, I do want to change the question a little bit, because you probably have the most significant voice in the sports debate world today. You know, I believe, or at least I suspect, that if LeBron does win the championship this year, there will be people, because of the nature of him, that will try to diminish the championship, that will try to say, well, it shouldn't count, you know, in the history the way others do because of this. What will you say if we're sitting here on August 30th and LeBron has just won his fourth championship and people try to suggest it's not as important?
Well, I would say congratulations to LeBron James, and I would tell all of his critics to kick rocks. That's what I would do, and here's the reason why. Last time I checked, professionalism doesn't just involve or entail your performance on the court in terms of your individual heroics. What about conditioning? What about keeping yourself focused and in shape? Think about the kind of things that Jalen and others, along with myself, have been talking about over the last few weeks. Who's keeping yourself in shape? Who's keeping yourself mentally, emotionally, and physically prepared for the challenge? Last time I checked, when the NBA announced that the season would be suspended, the operative word was suspended, not terminated, not canceled. It was suspended with the possibility that you was still paid about 75% of your salary. There is no excuse on God's green earth for a professional athlete knowing that the specter of a season, continuing and going forward as a possibility, should have any excuse whatsoever to not be prepared to play. So whoever that champion is going to be, it's not going to be just because of their skill set. It's going to be because of their focus and determination and discipline that is supposed to come with being a professional athlete, to make sure sure that you prepare yourself for the challenge of coming back and being ready to ball. Those who took care of themselves and prioritized that will be ready. Those who don't will get exposed. Last time I checked, that's a good reason to crown a champion as well.
All right, there's one other thing I want to get from you guys this morning. And Jalen, The Last Dance, of course, is something that we've been watching here, and it reveals a very interesting side of Michael Jordan's sometimes contentious relationship with his teammates. Charles Barkley was a guest on the Dan Le Batard show yesterday and said Jordan used selective prosecution. Listen to this.
He knows he has selective prosecution over there, right? He knows who to pick on.
Right.
Listen, Michael's awesome, but let me tell you something. There's certain guys you can't treat like that. Like, you have to know what guys you can treat badly, and they're going to accept it. You're screaming at guys all the time, punching guys. Come on, man. There's certain guys that will whip the hell out of you if you try doing that. So he has selective prosecution. I mean, Scott Burrell and Steve Kerr. I mean, come on, man.
Jalen, what do you think? Did Michael exercise selective prosecution?
You know how much we love Chuck, and I got to get him on the phone. He'll probably text me after this. Here's the thing. Yep. If you watching The Last Dance, you know Michael Jordan was an equal opportunity employer. It didn't matter if you were management.
Thank you.
It didn't matter if you were on the coaching staff. It didn't matter what teammate it was. If you really look at the Bulls' early championships in particular, you could have taken the other 13 players besides Scottie Pippen and named them. And got the exact same response and the exact same laughs. You know why? Because they weren't stars. They weren't champions yet. Phil wasn't an established coach yet. So he had to uplift an entire culture in order to do that from the top down. And I don't believe in that case he took it light on somebody just because they sat at the end of the bench.
Stephen A.?
Well, first of all, Jalen is absolutely right. And obviously, I've spoken to Michael Jordan over the last several weeks on a plethora of issues involving this docuseries. And this is one of them. Charles Barkley knows better. And we all love Charles. We love him to death. He's like a brother to all of us. But Charles Barkley knows for a fact that's not true, because MJ didn't hesitate to call out Charles Barkley to his face privately, not publicly. But Charles knows that. Also knows Steve Kerr wasn't the only one that received Michael Jordan's wrath. Purdue was hit by Michael Jordan as well, because Michael Jordan didn't like the fact that he was setting picks hard in practice, but in games against the Knicks and others, he wasn't doing the same thing. When Dennis Rodman was with Carmen Electra in the hotel room when he went on vacation, who was knocking at the door to come and get Dennis Rodman himself? When Scottie Pippen needed to be brought along and challenged, who was in his face challenging him? Michael Jordan was equal opportunity. Oh, by the way, the same thing in the media. He's cussed me out. He's gotten in my face. He's gotten in other people's face. Ask Mike Wilbon about how he's approached Mike Wilbon from time to time. God rest his soul. We can't ask Kobe for obvious reasons, but Kobe and him have argued. Michael Jordan didn't hold back from anybody. He considered it challenging. He didn't consider it bullying or anything like that. He would challenge anybody whose agenda and objective did not match his own. And he was completely indiscriminate with that. And Charles Barkley knows that.
20 minutes from First Take, Stephen A. and Company. We'll be back, guys. Thank you, Jalen. Great to see you, my man. Thank you guys both for this. Meanwhile, as we continue here on Get Up, if you think the NFL MVP is going to be Patrick Mahomes or Lamar Jackson, think again. Neek knows who it's going to be, and it's neither of them. He'll tell you next. Get up, ESPN.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at GEICO, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now, it's our turn to share with the GEICO Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
I don't know the question you're trying to ask.
You better tomorrow.
I'm not answering that. That's a clown question, bro.
Next.
Mike, why are you in such a bad mood?
What do you care?
What else do you want to know?
Next question.
Your next question.
Next question.
I'm not going to answer any questions for you.
Answer my question! The question, jerk!
It is the time of the show where I will suggest a series of provocative questions to that man, Dominique Foxworth, and he will answer them whether he's ready to or not. Here we go. Neek, Caesars released their MVP odds yesterday. The best odds are Patrick Mahomes at 4-1, followed by Lamar Jackson. Dak Prescott is 9-1. Who are you watching for MVP?
Kyler Murray. I really like what Kyler Murray did last year, and him adding a weapon like Hopkins, I think, will really improve him. He was the second most accurate quarterback on deep passes, which are passes for 30 or more yards. The first was Russell Wilson. Kyler Murray came on really strong towards the end of that season. He seemed really comfortable in that system, and they're adding more weapons. They got an offensive lineman. That's the only question, if that offensive line can stand up. And I think there's something special about that second year. Lamar Jackson won in his second year. You saw Patrick Mahomes win in his second year at quarterback, and Carson Wentz had his best season and an MVP caliber season in his second year. So I think you could look out, and especially considering how bad that franchise has been in recent history, they happen to turn around and get some wins, and Kyler Murray is the reason why. I think he could shoot up to the top of the MVP race, even if he doesn't have the best stat.
All right, I like that one. Let's talk about another quarterback next. Tua Tagovailoa officially signs with the Dolphins yesterday. Will he lead Miami to a Super Bowl?
I mean, I really like what they're doing down there, but I mean, betting on someone to win a Super Bowl is such a wild shot. Like, it's hard to win Super Bowls, and we don't even know if he can stay healthy yet. He hasn't done it in college. Presumably, he'll learn how to protect himself better, and they'll do a better job of protecting him in Miami, and maybe he can stay healthy. I think he has the talent to do it, but betting on him winning a Super Bowl in Miami when Dan Marino couldn't even win a Super Bowl down there in Miami, I think is a stretch. And also, that AFC, man, it's tough. There's a lot of quarterbacks he's going to have to go through, including Deshaun Watson, which we see there, Lamar Jackson, and Patrick Mahomes. He's going to have to beat one or two of those quarterbacks just to get to the Super Bowl, never mind whatever's happening in the NFC.
All right, and then the last one. The final episodes of Last Dance over the weekend would highlight Jordan's first retirement in baseball career. The last ones, I should say.
Right.
How many rings would Michael Jordan have today if he hadn't retired the first time?
I think six, maybe. Like, I think that we overestimate Michael Jordan. We think he's a god. Like, maybe he's above human, but he's not a god. And it seemed obvious that he was burned out. Even before the murder of his father, he told Mark Bansal, the writer for Rare Air, the autobiography Michael Jordan had, that he was planning on taking a break from basketball even before his father lost his life. So I think he would have had a hard time maintaining this workload going forward. And also, those teams that won that year, those Houston teams were fantastic. You had Olajuwon, Ori, Kenny the Jet Smith, and then in the second championship, they had Baltimore own Sam Cassell, one of my favorite players. So I think it would have been very difficult, and they lost Horace Grant. So that second season that he came back late, they didn't have Rodman yet, and Horace Grant had gone down to Orlando, which was also loaded. That's who knocked them out of the playoffs. They had Shaq and Penny and Horace Grant. I think they probably would have lost one or both of those seasons, and then I think that break allowed them to have the energy to get that second three-peat. So maybe the second three-peat doesn't even happen if Jordan doesn't have that baseball break and a couple seasons off.
They're going to be very upset with you in Chicago because there's an expression that we use in Chicago, minimum eight-peat, my friend. And it's as simple as that. Neek,
you
well
got to be
done.
Facetious
you,
when you
man.
Say that, obviously.
Let me get
no
back
problem.
To the college stuff here because the discussion continues across the country about the best ways to conduct the upcoming college football season if they can't. Herman Edwards was a guest on First Take yesterday saying safety is his biggest concern.
We all want to go out there and put our feet in the water, but what is this going to look like? Remember, there's 100 college football players on both sidelines. 100. That's a lot of young men with coaches. That's approximately 150 people on both sides. That's 300 people just on the sidelines, up in the press boxes. How do we make this work?
That's a really good question. And as Laura and Feinbaum rejoin us here, Laura, that's something we really haven't addressed much. We've talked a lot about what coaches and administrators want to do. But how do they do this?
It's such a good question, Greeny, and they're still trying to figure so much of this out. And I really think It's going to look different dependent upon the school that we're talking about and dependent upon the schools that are playing. And that's where this really gets interesting. You know, Paul mentioned earlier on the show how some of these schools are already looking at their potential opponents and saying, hey, if I'm Alabama, I'm not sure if USC is ready to play when I am to start the season. So I may need to look for another opponent. There may be a scenario where we see some schools look at other states and the schools within that state and try to find like-minded schools, for lack of a better way to put it, schools that are willing to take these risks that we are putting out there and willing to do it for the financial viability of their universities. And I think it's interesting because it is discussed about how do we social distance fans in the stands. That's something that many universities already have plans in place for. They're going to try to see how they could do that and how they could manage it. But to Herm Edwards' point, how are you keeping the players and the coaches safe? And I think that's something that testing is a big part of. We've already heard some coaches talk about that. But at the end of the day, it's a risk that is assumed on both sides, I think, no matter what.
Paul, let me come to you here because I think it's possible no one in America talks to more college football fans every single day than you do on your radio show. What are the concerns you're hearing from them?
Well, fans are concerned, and I think everyone should be concerned about not starting the season, regardless of what the stands look like, Greeny. What happens if a player tests positive? What's the protocol going to be? Does the whole team have to be quarantined? If Alabama's playing Auburn that weekend, is the game postponed? Is there a forfeit? I don't think anyone knows the answer to those questions. And all the Zoom meetings that commissioners and ADs and college football coaches have every single day, and it's all worthwhile, are not going to solve that problem until we get to it.
Dan, let me ask you again, as a former player, like what kinds of safety precautions would you be looking to see taken before you would feel comfortable coming back?
Yeah, I mean, Greeny, mind you that I'm hopefully a lot more mature right now than I was as a kid. Yeah, I think the biggest thing is a potential waiver. Like me as an 18, 19, 20-year-old kid, do I have to sign a waiver saying if I do get sick that I'm responsible? Am I responsible for my medical care? Am I responsible for whatever may come down the line from me, you know, contracting this disease potentially? Like, or am I going to be completely covered by the school, the institution, the NCAA, my conference? What happens, God forbid, that there's a long-term effect on me if I get it? Like, again, where am I not only covered safety-wise from my general health, but also like the overall well-being of the long-term kind of impact on my life potentially. Mm. And so I think that's a great challenge that every player is going to have to ask their school, their head coach. To Herm Edwards' point is, how much are you actually going to protect me if we have to play football this year? That's going to be a big question that I would have to have answered long-term.
Well, Laura, you're talking to all these people. What are you hearing about that?
Well, you know, we spoke to Dan Mullen yesterday, the head coach at Florida, and he said they've already provided tests for some players that thought they might have been exposed to COVID-19 and that may have had symptoms. No one came back with any positive testing, just on the ones that they provided to some of their players. You know, one thing that's interesting in all this, too, is most of these universities around the country have hospitals either on campus or close to campus that are very premier research hospitals and have a lot of great medical minds that are there. They are all consulting with these universities specifically, and then that, of course, trickles to the athletic programs. And so I believe that they're getting some of the testing capabilities there. But I still would say in all of this, and something that, you know, a lot of the leaders that are involved here, we're talking about specific regional pockets around the country, so it differs. But most leaders always say they've got to be able to have the testing in place in order to really make this as safe as possible. And I wouldn't be surprised if we got to a point where they said, hey, look, we can bring college football back in some way, shape, or form, but they're going to have to be almost weekly tests at the very least to make sure that everyone's staying safe throughout all of it.
Paul, quick final thought.
Yeah, I'm not sure that can be done. I want to see college football as much as anyone, but there are so many risks. And you heard what Anthony Fauci said yesterday, that right now it couldn't be done. Well, my question is, we're under 4 months away from the start of the college football season. I realize the curve goes down, but we still have some of the same risks, especially, Greeny, as the season moves into the colder months.
Well, we'll have to wait and see on all this. Yeah, 3.5 months until the season would be scheduled to begin. Great work, guys. Thank you very much. And I want to make sure everyone knows that this coming Monday, which is May 18th, we will be asking you to get up earlier than usual, because we're doing a special 3-hour edition of Get Up coming off the finale of The Last Dance on Sunday night. We will talk at length about the impact Michael Jordan had and continues to have every day. That's this Monday, 7 to 10 in the morning, Eastern Time, here on ESPN. A full day of sports conversation coming your way on ESPN. Right after we wrap up here, it's time for First Take. That's followed by SportsCenter, then NFL Live, The Jump, First Take Extra, Jalen and Jacoby, Highly Questionable and Around the Horn. Then a 2-hour SportsCenter at 5 o'clock with the PTI guys joining the fun at 5:30, and cap the day off with SportsCenter with SVP. Again, a full day of sports conversation here on ESPN, as we bring you every single day, and it is our privilege here at Get Up to be with you every morning. I'll remind you again, next Monday we'll be here for 3 hours coming off what will be a spectacular finish to the Last Dance films on Sunday night. We'll see you same place, same time tomorrow. I'm Greeny from Bristol. First Take starts now.